We just stepped on their face with a hobnail boot and broke their nose.
So how about them fucking dogs? That's what I told them.
Hope it doesn't take that long again. Go dogs.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the 100 Sanford podcast. We are back here after a few week layoff. It's Lamar Lovelace. I got the one and only Graham Coffee with me. We got Big George coming on a little bit later. Graham, what's going on, man?
Man, not much. You know, we got through G-Day and the draft. Lots of dogs taken. You know, finally have some fresh Georgia football that we got to watch here a couple weeks ago. So it's nice. It feels like we're halfway through the off season basically, and that we're through the bad part. You know, now we get to just start looking ahead. It'll be football season before we know it.
Yeah, man, you know, like you just got to that big G-Day. The NFL draft just happened, and again, the dogs dominate. I guess Alabama had nine guys, like we had nine guys, but when you look over the past 2 years, 25 guys, Georgia breaks another record in terms of guys going into the NFL, the amount of guys drafted, and it kind of goes back to what Kirby says, you know, either you're elite or you're not. You know, which one are you going to be? And it seems right now that the dogs are really elite, even in some of those interviews that the draft picks were having, you know, you had Nolan in Philadelphia, you had Broderick in Pittsburgh, you had all these guys talking about what it's like to come from Georgia into the NFL. And I listened to a lot of different interviews, and a lot of players didn't talk about their teams that they were from. You know, they talked about themselves. Hey, they gave praise to God for getting there. They talked about all the other people that got them there. But these guys continue to preach the message, which is the culture of Georgia. And I think, to me, over the last few weeks, that's what's come out more than anything else, is the culture that they have built in Athens, which is why a team like Philadelphia goes into Athens and says, you know what, I'll take five of those guys on my defense. You know, why teams are really poaching the players that come from Athens. I mean, either you're elite or not. And right now we're elite. What are your thoughts, man?
Absolutely, yeah. And I mean, you know, I thought back to when Glenn Schumann was reached out to by the Eagles to interview for that job as their defensive coordinator. And I mean, they talked to 10, 11, 12 candidates, and he was one of the final three that they wanted to bring back for a second interview. And I've heard from some people that, you know, he was the guy that they were targeting to hire for that job. And, you know, he decided to come back to Georgia. He took a raise to stay in Athens. He's making nearly $2 million a year now. But it just drives home how much respect that, you know, not just the NFL, but really that particular organization has for what Kirby Smart has done. Because Glenn Schumann is the closest thing we've seen to Kirby since Kirby, right? He's kind of baby right. Kirby. And, you know you're not getting Kirby, right? And so you can't get Schumann either, at least not yet. And what do? You go and get a bunch of guys that have been developed by him and Kirby and Will Muschamp and Dan Lanning previously. And I think it's not just a compliment to the players and how they play the game and how they execute and the high IQ they have when it comes to playing defensive football, but I also think that it speaks to the culture at Georgia, right? Which is kind of ironic considering the offseason that we've had and some of the conversations that have gone on nationally or that have been started by the Atlanta newspaper or whatever. But right. Like, you don't bring 5-6 dudes from the same program that play together and were really kind of the core of that team in a lot of ways and were, you know, high up in terms of the kind of leadership hierarchy unless you want to replicate that. And, you know, it's like, it's not just the Philadelphia Eagles bringing in Georgia's defense. Like, they are trying to take the culture that has been built in Athens and get some of that in their building. And I think that really says more than anything about what Kirby Smart has done.
Yeah, man. Is that George, Big George Foster?
Can y'all hear me? Because I'm trying to look something different. I have to pivot, or I have to, you know, I had to call an audible.
And you're adjusting on the fly.
Yeah, I had to call an audible. And so I'm sitting here at these train tracks because I couldn't get still. And so, but how's this mic work? How's this Beats by Dre microphone working?
You sound good, man.
Yeah, you sound good, man. If I was a woman, I'd say you sound sexy, but you know.
Hey! I still got my Barry, get my Barry White on. I heard you talking. I don't know where the conversation started, but just where I picked in up on it, Graham was talking about Philly getting all the dogs. You know what crossed my mind is, and I could be thinking too deep into it, is this an experiment of sorts?
Mm.
When I say an experiment of sorts, meaning, of course, you won't be able to try this with every college team because most college teams are not going to have, you know, that many draft picks, worthy draft picks, you know, on one team. But I wonder if it was like an experiment to see how if having that continuity and familiarity between your roster coming from college to pro, if that will kind of, you know, pay dividends. It'd be interesting to see. Of course, all those guys will have to make it to the field. You know what I mean? But it'd be interesting to see.
Well, I think Graham was, in a way, alluding to something like that. But I, like you mentioned, though, you have to have the dogs and you have to have the talent to do something like that. I don't think there's too many colleges that have the ability to bring guys from a collegiate level to a pro level and play at a high level. I mean, we're talking about going back to maybe those old Miami teams, Alabama, when it was putting out big-time defensive players with, hey, by the way, when Kirby was there, right? They have not done that since the big dog was over there in Tuscaloosa. You right. got to have those type of, you know, guys that can do that. And when you're recruiting at a level that George is recruiting at, high four stars, five stars, and if they're a three star, they're still developing them into five star type athletes, then yeah, it's probably going to be something you can replicate in the NFL. You can go and poach Georgia players over the next 3 to 4 or 5 years and build your whole roster with a team that was all recruited together, that bonded together, that developed together, that built a culture together. And like I was telling Graham before you got on, when you listen to the interviews of Georgia players, Nolan in specific, talk about the culture, what that culture means, how it's what it's going to feel like to play next to his dogs. Man,
yeah.
I mean, that's a built-in home. I mean, even Todd McShay, which has been driving me crazy. I mean, the guy's on my last nerve the way he keeps going after Jalen Carter. Really, I mean, he's kind of pissing me off. I'll be honest about it because I don't think there's anybody else he's really going after like that in terms of his football character and everything else. But even he said, you know, when you do have a guy like a Jalen Carter and all of a sudden you bring him into Philly and he's playing around his guys, he might be more accountable to play with those guys and be held more accountable to be able to play within that system because they are a culture and they are a unit. So I could see no that. Question. No doubt about it. But, I mean, I don't know if there's too many other teams that can do it. I mean, not now.
Yeah, you know, like I say, it could be a singular experiment just within that organization to say, okay, I wonder how this is going to work. Because they didn't have to draft all those Georgia guys and then trade it for another, you know what I mean? But there's a reason they did it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it could be for continuity sake, familiarity sake. And they, you know, they just happen to be really good players, you know what I mean, as well. So it's going to be interesting to see how it unfolds there.
Yeah. Well, guys, we got a, you know, we had a special guest that was coming on tonight. And like you said, George, we had to call an audible. I mean, everything was kind of built around that guest, and we are going to get him on at another time. But we're going to switch some things up. We got some questions that came to us. Oh, so I'm just going to throw, it's going to be a mailbag today. All right. All so we're going to throw the questions out, let the experts answer those questions. So first question, let's see. Has anyone left the roster through the portal that has a significant impact on this year's 23-24 team? What are your thoughts on that?
So I think that the one that would be most likely to say yes about would be Bear Alexander. But my argument against him really being much of an impact is that so Bear Alexander, what he is a he's an athletic three technique defensive tackle who is explosive with his first step and can rush the passer, right? Like he's not really a run stopper, which means if you play at Georgia and you're not a run stopper, then you are not a three down defensive lineman. You are a, you know, you're a passing down specialist.
Which you're a specialist.
Yeah. What he is or what he would have been for Georgia. And my real belief is just that Georgia's got a lot of dudes like that on their roster already. Like Warren Brinson kind of fits that mold. He's gotten better every year as a run stopper, but you know, that's definitely his strength is kind of his athleticism at that size. Ingram Dawkins, another guy who, you know, has played across the front of that line. And even in certain passing situations, you know, in third and longs, we have seen Mykel Williams slide inside so that Georgia can put two true, like, stand-up edge rushers on the field. So I don't know how much it really changes how they play defense or, you know, maybe he would have had a few sacks that he doesn't have otherwise, but also maybe the guys who are on the field in his spot are – creating those plays as well. I mean, Kristen Miller on G-Day, like, did some things that a freshman defensive tackle normally doesn't do in terms of his hands and the way that he was kind of able to set up some of those guards for some pass rush moves. So I don't think it has a very big difference on Georgia's defense one way or the other unless guys start getting hurt and, you know, you're missing that depth.
Right.
Yeah, I totally agree.
I say, you know, now granted, it probably won't affect the team because of, you know, how we reloaded, but AD was a significant player.
Oh, that's a good one. I forgot about AD.
That entered the portal and is now at Texas. You know, I got some guys that, you know, some of my old teammates and stuff that are out there and everything, and they definitely love having them.
Oh, yeah.
they definitely love having them at Texas. So he will be one. Of course, we reloaded. Of course, we had talent already. We picked up some more guys in the portal. But he will be a notable loss from the portal into the portal, rather.
You're right about that. I forgot about him. I mean, you're talking about a guy who made, you know, the game-winning catch against Ohio State and, you know, the go-ahead catch against Alabama in the playoff 2 years in a row. You can't pretend he's not a big-time player.
Right.
Yeah, and I have to echo what both of you guys said, but I have to counter on the offensive side because when you go out and you get, you know, a Dominic Lovett, a rah-rah Thomas. I mean, one thing about Kirby and his coaching staff, they're always a step ahead of what everybody else is. They have the pulse of the room. They kind of know what they have to replenish before they lose certain things. Now, I don't think anybody could have necessarily foreseen Bear leaving. Heck, I know as fans we didn't, you know, going into that, coming out of that national championship run, but they get a pulse. They know what a kid is like. They know what the family's like. They know what the handlers are like. And I'll throw all those things out there. They know all those things. So They have to have a pulse of what's going on in their room. So, which leads me to the second question. And I think this comes really at George, and this is pretty interesting. At what point is Kirby Smart recognized as the best coach in college football?
I don't know. Is by who?
By the fans and even nationally. And I think one of the things that's even to be thought about, right? Switch it to another sport. You got Dawn Staley, who's dominating women's basketball, right? They didn't win the national championship this year, but she's balling out of her mind in terms of coaching, recruiting, and everything else. But she's still not recognized as the top women's coach in women's basketball. You're still going to look at Geno up there at UConn. You're still going to look at, you know, the ladies coach down there at LSU. But that's because Geno's won so many titles. But is Geno still really the top dog in women's basketball? So I look at it like in college football.
Well,
Nick is still there.
When will he be recognized by the rest of everyone? I don't know, but I feel like he's earned it now, you know, considering been to three national championships, won two, got an SEC championship, been to how many SEC championship games? Four?
Ooh, more than that. Five, right? 2017,
2018,
2019, 2021, 2022. Yeah, five.
Like this, you know, been to those, recruited at a fever pitch, like ridiculous clip, you know, the guys that he's putting, sending to the next level. He's the guy right now. The only thing about it is, you know, it's going to always be guys nipping at your heels, you know, when you're the guy. Like, you know, Georgia's probably, what's their class ranked this year? Second, third?
In recruiting, they were number two, right behind Alabama.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Behind who? Alabama. You know what I'm saying? They're never going to be too far away. Now, granted, I think they're gonna have some issues with the QB this year, you know. But that's you know we'll see that lands where that lands them, you know what I mean. But they're gonna always still be there talent wise. But Kirby, like, to me, he's the top dog, and you know, pun intended, but no bias involved. I think he's the top dog right now to me.
So I think it's you're right, you know, what you said about the Georgia, Alabama, you know, they're in terms of you just look at the recruiting rankings and the cumulative of those rankings on the rosters, and they're very close. Talent acquisition is a big part of being a college football coach, and Kirby Smart and Nick Saban are two of
it's the thing.
Yeah. Well, here. So this is where I'm going with this. Lately,
sorry to interrupt.
No. You're good. Yeah. With a college coach, right? 100%. And I would say Nick Saban is the greatest recruiter in the history of college football. Like if you look at just the body of work and what he's been, the types of dudes he's brought in since he was at LSU in the early 2000s. It's a 20-year run of nothing but, you know, top three classes, basically. But what is why I would put Kirby over Nick today? Nick's body of work is better. It's longer. You know, there's more total titles and all of that. But the difference is that Kirby Smart, like, you look at the style of football that Georgia's playing. And what do they look like? They look like what Alabama did in their most dominant stretches of their dynasty under Saban, whether that was the late 2000s, early 2010s. And what I mean by that is it's a line of scrimmage game. And Alabama used to be inevitable, right? Like, that's what they were as a program, was they removed doubt. And Nick Saban, I'll never forget, you know, when he stood up on the podium at a press conference and he said, you know, it used to be our goal to shut teams down with our defense. And now the offenses have gotten so good where, you know, you have to be able to score points to win. And that created a philosophical shift to where it kind of changed the style of football that they played. And their defenses have not been very good most years since Kirby left. I mean, they've had some very good defenses, but they haven't been, like, truly elite. And you look at Kirby before the 2021 season, right? Like, there was all these questions about Kirby, right? Like 2 years ago, there was people talking about, can this dude get it done? Is he just a guy that acquires talent but doesn't really turn that talent into the big, big prize? And he sat on the podium in the lead up to that season where Georgia opened with Clemson and said, you know, our goal is to give up 13 points a game. That's what we expect. I don't care that offenses have changed. And there's a mentality difference there that has shown through on the football field. And I think that you look at Georgia's draft picks over the last 2 years, you see a couple first-round defensive tackles. You see first-round offensive tackle. You see a lot of guys on the line of scrimmage. And I believe it was Alabama had, I think, 7 guys taken in the first 3 rounds. The only lineman that was taken was a transfer from Vanderbilt who played 1 year at Alabama, Steen. Yeah, Tyler Steen. And I think that that is informative of the difference between the two programs right now. Alabama has a ton of talent at the skill positions, but at the end of the day, when you run up on a line of scrimmage football team like Georgia, you know, the football works from the inside out. And there's a large problem with how the game gets talked about on television and on podcasts and on the internet, because when people look at matchups and they look at teams, they start by talking about quarterbacks and receivers and running backs. And all of those things are great and they're exciting, but all those things can only do their job if the offensive line is able to block. And the same thing happens on the other side of the football, right? If the defensive line can't stand up against the run, then it doesn't matter how good your number one corner is, because he's going to be erased. And Georgia is doing that, right? Like, they are playing football from the inside out, and that style of football creates an inevitability that is as close to certainty as you can get in the game right now. And that is not the style that Alabama is playing.
And that's the thing. The crazy thing about that is you wonder why.
It's, right.
And you, but you also, it kind of lends you to believe that, you know, Kirby's been with that man for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, way back once, you know, like, once he left Florida State, did he come back to Georgia once?
He was there for 1 year.
Yeah.
He was at Florida State when did he come back to Georgia, or is that when he went with Nick after Florida State?
I think he was running back coach at Georgia for a year.
And then went with Nick.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And he's been there since. Like, yeah. Like, and so, like, he's married to that success, if you want to keep it a book.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And, you know, he didn't beat the master the first time. You know what I mean? But he's kind of taken over since then. And so it kind of puts you in the mind of, like, do you wonder, you know, was Kirby, you know, the secret, you know, ingredient to that recipe?
Was he the edge? You know what I'm saying?
Let me answer that for you. Maybe Kirby has always been the culture setter. You know, it's okay. You know, some of the greatest leaders in history.
Could be.
Some of the greatest leaders in history aren't the smartest guy. They're not the most intelligent guy. They don't have the best abilities. But they know how to put people around them that can control the atmosphere so they can do what they do. When you look at Jordan, Jordan's not the best culture creator, you know, when he was with the Bulls. No, they had a team around them that can do everything else, do all the dirty work that Jordan could not do, right? So I think with Kirby, he takes culture with him. He builds culture. You keep hearing about it. We've talked about it at the beginning of the podcast, how what the culture is like, and these guys take it to the NFL level. I think Kirby has just managed to be able to recruit at a torrid pace. He can coach his butt off. He hires guys that adopt his culture and understand it as well. And if not, you're gone, right?
It's been an underrated part of Kirby's tenure at Georgia too, is the coaching that he surrounds himself with. You know, he's had some turnover. Yeah. You know, I don't know if it's at the pace of, you know, turnover that Alabama had for a while when they were really winning, a lot of turnover. I don't know if it was that much of turnover, but he's had some, you know, turnover even in some of the fringe, you know, positions, you know, maybe not a lot of coordinator turnover, but he's had some turnover in that staff. But everybody he's added seems to be doing pretty doggone good, you know, as a part of that staff. And that's been key as well. And I think just Kirby sticking with the way he recruits allows him to play his style of football, allows him to establish the type of culture he has established there. And also, and that brand of football he plays, is hard. Everyone can't combat it. You know what I mean? So it's kind of like, you know, everybody says like in football in general is different nowadays. It's spread out. It's a little fancy. It's a little, you know, finesse. It's all that. And for the most part, you know, it is. But the thing about it, if you're a team that could play rough and tough football at a high level, nobody's built to go against that.
Nobody matches up against it.
You know what I mean? So everybody's built with these 220-pound, 215-pound linebackers to stop teams from airing out against them. And then you line up against Georgia on, you know, Saturday, and you got 330-pound linemen across the board firing off on your 210-pound linebackers, and you can't do nothing about it. Not to mention the 280-pound tight end that just left. It went in the third round.
And runs a 4.6.
You know? So, like, who's built for that? Nobody.
Nice.
Nobody's built for that. Not a soul. And so, you know what I'm saying? These teams are built for the modern era of football, but if you got a throwback that can recruit at a high clip and also add some wrinkles of the modern times, they're hard to deal with. And Kirby's in a mode right now. If he can keep recruiting how he's recruiting and keep getting, you know, solid quarterback play, they're going to be tough to deal with for a while.
Well, I'm glad you said that, Foss. I'm glad you said that, because here's a question that's pointing right at Graham. Okay, this comes from Tom Harlow. What's the advantage to either a quarterback like a Dylan Raiola or to a college team to put off making a commitment? And wait a minute, let me preference by saying, I'm not saying Dylan's making a commitment, by the way, folks. I mean, I'm hoping, but this was the
question. Asking why
you, what is the advantage to it? You know, because we always hear these rumors, these scutterbugs about, hey, you know, this kid's, you know, poised to make a commitment. He's a silent, coaches won't let him commit. What's the advantage of Kirby or any other coach holding off a commitment from a player?
Well, two things. The first is that a kid doesn't have to be committed to be doing things behind the scenes, recruiting other guys in his class to a school. It helps. Like, you know, I mean, it solidifies it even more, but a guy like Rayola, for example, you know, could still be talking to the type of wide receivers that he would like to play with. And, you know, getting them lean in the direction of the school that he's going to go to. With why a coach would want to do it, and I've always said this about Kirby Smart, like Kirby understands the way that we consume football today better than almost any college coach that I've really paid much attention to. Like, he gets the modern media cycle and he understands how fickle momentum is, right? Like, you will see a lot of times, you know, some kid from 2024 or 2025 or some future class will decommit that might have been committed for a little while, who's still only a sophomore in high school or something. And maybe one or two of those comes down in a 4-day period. And then the chatter on social media or other places is, hey, Georgia's not doing well in recruiting right now. Georgia's losing a little momentum. And then Kirby calls up some 5-star kid like Dylan Rayola and says, all right, now's the time, you know, throw the ace down. And I think the other side of it too is that, I mean, like, a kid like Rayola is unique because his recruitment is one where he gets to dictate terms. Like, if there's a chance that he could be in your class, then you're going to wait on him. But there were other 5-star quarterbacks in the 2024 class who Georgia was in conversations with this time last year and through the summer, who Kirby, you know, said, hey, like, okay, you have permission to commit. Like, if you want to commit, there is a spot for you in this class. And they didn't. And then, you know, maybe a month or two later, they decided, hey, I do want to commit to Georgia. I'm ready now. And the ship had already sailed. And it was like, well, you know, you had your shot. We've moved on to other targets. So I think when you're Georgia right now, like, you get to dictate terms in recruiting in ways that most schools don't, you know. You get to kind of basically pick between the 5-star kids that you want. There's not just one or two 5-star kids that, you know, you have a chance at and that you're hoping maybe – will come down to your school. It's like, all right, well, this one doesn't want to come here, but we still really like this guy. So this kid seems like he's ready to commit, you know, bird in the hand is worth two in the bush kind of thing. So I think that is the logic behind some of that stuff. I think, you know, let's just address the elephant in the room, right? Like, Rayola was set to commit here a couple weeks ago now. And then, you know, that news started leaking out, which is fine in and of itself, but a reporter from a recruiting website, a national reporter, called up his dad at 6 o'clock in the morning and said, hey, is your kid committing today? And once that happens, then, you know, the surprise is kind of ruined. Right. So I think that, you know, I guess what I would say is, you know, we might see public commitments happen at certain points in times, but more often than not, I would say, you know, 8 or 9 times out of 10, the staff has known for a while that kid is coming to school at Georgia or wherever else. It's always better when it's public because there's public pressure. And with a kid like Rayola, you'll have a domino effect of players who want to play with him. But, yeah, I mean, I think it's just the manipulation of those media cycles and trying to always keep the perception positive of your program.
Hey, George, have you ever heard of anybody or did you guys do that when you were playing? Hold man, back commitments, certain launches of commitments.
I'm just now learning about this new school of recruiting, man. It's all wild, man. I didn't know till recently that, you know, and it kind of makes sense with the holding kids off, you know, telling when they can repeat. Like, it's kind of like, you know, like spreading out the commitments and stuff, mm-hmm. and like learning, and I'm learning the why that it happens and it kind of makes sense and this, that, and the other, but this all new to me, you know. Now, maybe it could have been happening behind the scenes during my day, and or maybe I was part of it and I didn't know it, but I feel like it's something that was different, you know. This is a whole different game, and I don't quite know when it started.
I think it started with social media. I mean, if you think about it, right, there was always recruits that got mentioned in the newspaper, the national newspaper, the Sports Illustrated, you know, when the Sports Illustrated would have their top 100, Streets and Smiths would have theirs, you know, stuff like that. But there wasn't really a system, orchestrated system, that would alert you to when a recruit was going to your school, your favorite school. It just didn't happen. You just basically found out whenever, you know, the school itself released their signings after signing day. That's when you found out.
Mm-hmm.
But now, you know, and I agree 100% with what Graham was talking about. And that's why you have teams like Georgia orchestrate what they're doing. It's a calculated movement. It does. It creates avalanches. It creates the emotional effect of a recruit that's sitting there saying, dang, I can play with Big George. Dang, I can play with a Dylan Raiola. And then Dylan calls him up and says, hey, man, I know you want to play with me. Look, I got Big George protecting me on my left side. I'm going down, you know, I'm going down deep with you on the right side. That plays into it.
And that's different, man. That's like we didn't get that type of to build that type of camaraderie or familiarity unless it was an official visit. Mm-hmm. My official visits are different now. They're done at different times now. Like, I saw something about an official visit, somebody slated for, I forgot what school it was, somebody slated for June or whatever. Like, we didn't do that. Like, official visits was done like after our football season. Right. You know, in high school. And so, like, but that's where you met up with your guys. You know what I mean? I remember, you know, who was at some of my official visits and some of my game, unofficial visits during the game. Like, that's where we all got together. Or postseason award shows and stuff like that. And like, I just got some pictures the other day. I think I posted one on Twitter the other day of, you know, me, John Stinchcomb, Jesse Miller, David Jacobs, and Ben Lowe, and cats. And like, this was all at, you know, Deacon Touchdown Club, you know, postseason banquet and stuff. And we were like the Super 7 or something like that. And that's how we all got to know each other, that stuff like that. But now, you know, you hear about a recruit, you can hit them up on Twitter or Instagram or whatever, you know, and be like, hey, man, where you, know what I'm saying? Where you going? What you thinking about? What you thinking? Right. This, that. And like, there's stuff like that we didn't really, I don't think, discuss or anything back then. It's like, okay, we here at Georgia. You know, this feels pretty cool. You know what I mean? And then you just go about your business and you commit, you know, like a commitment was, like a commitment was a commitment back then between, like, on behalf of the athlete and on the behalf of the school. Like now, a commitment is different. Like soft commitments, and commitments with like conditional commitments. A school can be like, you can try somewhere else. You know what I mean? Like,
that's crazy, right?
Like school, in a way. So in a way, I get these kids that want to, you know, keep their, you know, exercise their agency, so to speak.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, I get it. You know what I mean? At first I used to be like, Oh man, these kids, wow, man, they ain't loyal, blah 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 blah. these schools ain't loyal either.
Yeah, and if you think about it, it's become such a big game, though. Even the schools themselves, that's why they have the soft commitment. That's why they can, you know, it's a conditional commitment, because the athlete too has become a little bit flaky, right? So, and at the same time, if you're building something, as we talk about it, and we just, again, we're just using Dylan's name as an example. Heck, we could use an Archie Manning who committed last year as an example. Look at Texas, their recruiting class. As soon as Archie committed, heck, do you think they were worried about their second quarterback that committed? No, they knew the avalanche was coming with the guys that wanted to play with Archie, because they knew that there was going to be NIL money flooded there. They knew that there was going to be opportunities of getting the ball, because they knew no Sark is going to throw the ball all over the place with an Archie Manning. The recruits knew. It's the same thing that happens with any school. They are making sure that they have the best avalanche of talent that comes down that pipe with them. But again, I hate to say it, but I love to say it. You got to go back to Kirby and what these guys are doing, because I think they do it a little bit higher, at a higher level. They make sure they have this perfect algorithm of guys that are completely culture and then guys that are just a little bit edgy. And I think those are the guys they really hold those scholars out for, to say, okay, if this guy wants to commit, I don't care how edgy he is, because we got the culture that can control it. And if we don't have the culture, we got coaches on top of that. We got mentors on top of that. We got guys that can communicate at a higher level with this guy that can keep him dialed in. I think that's why Georgia is doing it at a whole nother level than anybody else.
Yeah, man, they're doing it extra big right now. And so, they got the system going. They're getting the guys, the type of guys that they want. You know, like I kind of noticed it with, you know, back in the Bama, I hate to keep talking about Bama, like past tense, like they not racking up wins and top classes still, but like in their super heyday of going to the national championship, like consistently, it wasn't always every five star, every four star. They were picking the three stars that fit their system. You know, the three-star linebacker that they want. Three-star D tackle that they want. You know, people that fit their system. And that's what I feel like Kirby's doing, at doing a great job of getting the guys that fit Georgia in the brand of football that they want to play. And you also got to have the right kids from the neck up too. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody just knowing what they do and what they go through, everybody can't handle it.
Yep.
Everybody can't handle it. You know what I mean? Like, when I was the type of kid that, I ain't know no better. I do whatever you tell me to do. You know what I mean? Plus, I came from, you know, we was pretty tough down there making, you know what I mean? I would do whatever you told me to do. And that was that. You know what I mean? I was trying to be the best player that I could be. So I was down to do whatever I was supposed to do. You know what I mean? Some of these kids, you know, and plus I wasn't, you know, in my mind, I wasn't this top tier recruit. You know what I mean? I was just happy to be there. You know what I mean? I was happy to be there. You know what I mean? What, run 21-10s? All right, coach, bet. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? I didn't have the luxury of being a difficult kid,
right?
In my eyes, you know what I mean. But you have some of these guys, you know, especially a lot of these kids are entitled these days. You know, they're the big fish. They're the big fish. All of them are the big fish.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
In today's age, Foss, when you look at it, in today's age, man, you got shoe companies. They, you know, especially like you cross over different sports, basketball and everything else. You got shoe companies coming at them, apparel companies coming at them. You got NIL dollars coming at them. You got agents already for kids that are in high school. So, yeah, they're entitled. I mean, they're driving they're driving cars better than what we got. And we grown men with families and everything else. You know what I mean? And they're driving that at 17, 18, coming on campus, talking about, I mean, we go back to Bear Alexander. He made a statement. He said, look, I was driving a Porsche when I was in high school, and I'm driving one now. I'm going to be the same player. Wow. What a statement to make. You know, talk about entitled. You know what I mean? But when you talk about that entitlement, that's crazy, man. But it, like you said, it is the truth. It's a different style of athlete, different from the head up. And it takes a special type of community of people to deal with that enablement all the time. I mean, it's constantly turned on. But like you mentioned, and you have your ear to the, you know, to the pulse of the organization, as we call it, it takes a special kind of person to deal with the pressure cooker that's built in the house of pain. It takes a special kind of person, and from the head up and if or neck up. And if you can't handle it, I think that's why, one, we see some of the guys leave that have left. I think that has to do with it a lot, because you don't want to deal with that all the time, and you still feel you have the ability and the talent to get to the next level, no matter where you go. But what these guys don't,
and a lot of them have, you know,
that's true. But you gotta.
They just want to do it, you know, somewhere else.
Hey, but I'm gonna go back to what my man Broderick said though. He got to Georgia and was getting his tail kicked in every day, every rep from six guys that went number one in the draft. You can't replicate that, no matter where you go.
That's true.
Not now. You can't replicate that. And I think once you stick it out, we go full circle to what you said when you first came on the show with Philadelphia getting five Bulldogs. Can this be replicated? Because if you can come through that, you can deal with anything else that's put in front of you here. When you can deal with that many five-star talents, with that much of the ball having to go to different people, for you not being the guy with the focus on them 100%, if you can be that much of a team guy, this NFL stuff is going to be easy for you. We can mold you into whatever we need to mold you into, and we're not going to have any issues. You're going to be sound. You're going to be technically sound. You're going to be mentally sound, and you're going to be able to handle this responsibility. It's not with every guy. You know, you're going to have some guys that fall through the cracks. I think they can go to some bad organizations on top of it, but it kind of goes full circle where I could see a team really saying to themselves, hey, I know where I can go, but I got to get a guy to fill a spot. I'm going to go to the well that I've gone to for a long time that I know I can get some good fish out of, and that's Georgia. That's Athens. The last question of the day. Does the team internalize disrespect with national rankings? Meaning, right now they're preseason ranked number three in a lot of people's eyes, three or four. You're talking about a back.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yes, sir. Talking about power rankings. Yeah, these are people. There are people coming out talking about after spring day, Georgia's ranked number three, and some have actually said, you know, four or five. Is that disrespectful?
I think it's very disrespectful. I think the national media wants to see a three-peat just to, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, it's great for ratings. It's great for stories.
Yeah, because they know, we all know now what Kirby's going to do with that, right?
Oh, yeah.
it was known. We figured out Kirby's MO this last year, you know, with, you know, having the guys thinking that nobody said they had a chance. Nobody said that, man. He's coming off a national championship. Nobody said that, dude. But he Kirby had them believing that. Right. Had them believing it. And so, you know, coming off another championship, recruiting how he's recruiting, and that being put out into the atmosphere again. Like, I think, for one, I don't think he's going to have to do much to convince these guys that they're being disrespected. I think they're just going to play the ball, the brand of ball that they're used to playing. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But he's going to figure out, you know, he's really good at what he does, man. He's going to keep them guys, you know, locked in for the whole year. You know what I mean? And it plays into his hand perfectly, man. You lost leaders. So he's going to be challenging guys to be leaders. You know, you lost your quarterback, your two-time national championship winning quarterback, Heisman finalist, QB. You lose him. So now you're going to make sure the quarterbacks you do have on the roster have chips on their shoulder. It's, you know, you got guys going to the NFL at a high clip. You can use that as motivation. You know, like, it's like this, it's playing into his hand.
Boss, it's
playing into his hand.
I'm going to bang this table, man, because what you did not realize is that, you know, it's either Alabama or Ohio State that they have over Georgia. Either, you know, they can flip-flop at one or two.
Mm-hmm.
The funny thing to that is that you said it plays into Kirby's hands. Both of those teams lost quarterbacks as well. Mm-hmm. They lost the number one pick, the number two pick, and we lost a two-time national championship quarterback. Now, at the same clip, we lose a few people on defense, a few people on offense, but the cupboard is still completely loaded with explosive players. It's not like Georgia's losing much. They're just really having to replace a few people.
They want to see.
My gosh, man.
They want to see a three-peat. They want to fuel it.
that's the fuel. That's what Kirby uses. Whoever's quarterback.
National media wants to fuel a three-peat.
Yeah, man. Because the Kirby is definitely.
We haven't really seen that.
Yeah, that's. I tell you what, I'd use it. And I know one thing, and I don't know if I'm Beck, if it's Beck or if it's Vandergriff or even Gunnar Stockton. If I'm sitting there and I'm in the quarterback room, I'm looking at the disrespect, because to me it's disrespectful for you to have Georgia at number three. And the reason why you have him at number three is because of the quarterback. When you look at Ohio State losing theirs and Alabama losing theirs, none of their quarterbacks have proven they could throw the rock either, because they didn't even get any time where they were at. You know, at least in Georgia, they got mop-up duty in the fourth quarter. Right. They didn't get any time. So to me, I'd be sitting there licking my chops saying, you know what, I'm about to have me one of those Joe Burrow-type years, and I'm going to go out there and sling this thing all over the place, because I know I got some dogs that can protect me on offense, especially that offensive line, and I got a defense that could be generational again. We could see the return of that 21 defense, which is a scary thought, man. So, but hey, man, that was the questions of the night. I know we pivoted a little bit. I was ready for this big-time interview that I know people would have gone nuts over, but we will have to reschedule that. Big recruiting news on the basketball end. I know did you see it, man? Did you see our boy Mike White go out there and get himself a shooter?
A blue big seven-footer?
Nah. Yo, they got the seven-foot transfer in. They definitely got him in, but Blue Kane, who was a top 52, recruit. Kid can shoot, man. The kid can shoot. He's a little shifty guard. You know, he's like, you know, maybe 6'4", 6'5", 6'6", get the ball to the rack. He's not explosive, but he can do all those other things, man. So, but that's a big-time pickup.
Nope.
Dogs.
He'll be good. I'm excited about Georgia basketball this year. I'm trying to make it up to some games this year.
Yeah, man. As long as they can keep that stadium together, they can keep Stedman from.
Right.
Otherwise, they're going to be out there in the parking lot playing, but that's all good. No matter where you play, you kind of get it done. But hey, man, I'm going to let you go. We get up out of here. I know we got things we had to do, but good to see you.
Good to see you. Catch up with everybody, though. You know, it's been a few weeks.
Yes, sir.
You know, we're gonna crank it back up.
Yeah, man, we got some good stuff coming down the pipe next couple weeks, especially with recruiting getting ready to heat up. Because I think come June 1st, boom, you're going to see an explosion of recruits committing to the Dogs. So it could be one of those years they break records, but we'll see.
Right.
All right, man. As always, see you at one of your Sanford.
For sure.
Go Dogs.
Go Dogs. All right, man.
Thank you for listening to the 100 Sanford Podcast. Tune in weekly to hear fresh content from the 100 Sanford Podcast every Thursday, but also with some pop-up shows every now and then as news breaks. You can also follow the content on our website, www.100sanfordpodcast.com, and email us at dogs@100sanfordpodcast.com. Lastly, reach out to us on social media streams. For Twitter, it's @100Sanford, but on IG, TikTok, Facebook, and other accounts, it's 100 Sanford Podcast. All right, folks, that's it. And as usual, see you at 100 Sanford.